Colonel Turner, Colonel Barry Turner, and people can go to my archives and hear over 9 or 10 interviews with Barry. That document does exist in his archives. I hope he finds good hands for his documentation, because it would be great to have. Eustace Mullins made his career on what Ezra Pound left him.
Exactly. That's something else that I've seen happen over the years. Oh boy, too many good people have assembled massive libraries of important materials, and then they get old and infirm and have to give it up. And in fact, Leslie Fry, her real name was Paquita de Shishmaref, the author of Waters Flowing Eastward. She had an extensive library that she was actually going to give to a friend of mine, and unfortunately things just came about that her library was lost forever. And you can imagine what a tremendous library that would have been from a learned woman of her type, you know. And so this has happened. So, you know, I would just urge any of your listeners out there, if they do have libraries and documentation that they value, to make sure that when they pass on, that it goes to good people who can carry on their work and preserve this vital material. And this is what you have done at IAmTheWitness.com, Darryl. I don't know of any other website out there that has put together all of this valuable historical information. I mean, I have all of these books, I think all of them, in my library. But the fact is, they have essentially gone out of print. But now, thanks to IAmTheWitness.com, they're up there for people to read and print out for themselves and to learn.
Well, you know, the one that knocked me over the most, and I got to be honest with you, I think it's one that the Westerners will wrap their brain around the best, and maybe the South Africans will find it as interesting, is the Archibald Mall Ramsey book. And the reason why is, first of all, he really does a great job of naming names and the people that were doing these criminal acts around him. But you also see the way they are able to silence people, what level they will stoop to in order to stop somebody from telling the truth. Of course, you know, he was, of course, incarcerated and vilified, and he had his family fortune was confiscated. I mean, Archibald Mall Ramsey went through a living nightmare because he found out the truth. But when you get done with learning about Archibald Mall Ramsey, you understand not only the conspiracy of his day, which it continues to today, but you also understand their methods of destroying somebody who comes upon the truth and is willing to say it. So, I love to keep him up top, because it's only a 120-page book, but it knocks you for a loop when you're reading it.
Well, you know, Darryl, this is interesting, again, because, you know, we keep coming full circle here. It comes back to the media. That's why I always say the media is the enemy. And, you know, this is what, in my experience in observing the media, and I think if people, the listeners, sit back and think about it, if they just look back and see who in the mass media today is most vilified, then they can get a pretty good understanding of who controls the media. Because you can judge, you know, they say, there's an old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover. Well, my counter to that is, you can judge a man by his enemies. And if you look today at the people who are most often savaged by the mass media, particularly in the United States, you get a pretty good understanding of who controls the media and what their agenda is. They can make a politician or they can break him. And if the mass media decides that you're a villain, you know, they turn you into the new Hitler. This is what they did to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was far from perfect. We understand that. But all of a sudden, someone who had been working with the United States was turned into a villain almost overnight. There were people in the United States who never knew who Saddam Hussein was. They had no idea where Iraq was. But I remember sitting here in the United States in the summer of 1990 and seeing a big picture of Saddam Hussein on the cover of one of the big weekly news magazines, all of which, incidentally, are controlled by Zionist elements. And I remember seeing Saddam Hussein, and they called him the most dangerous man in the world. Well, it was within about a month that all of a sudden then, after Saddam invaded Kuwait, after that, every American knew who Saddam Hussein was, and that was simply because of the power of the media.
Yeah.
So we have a very, very serious enemy. All peoples of this planet have a very serious enemy in the mass media.
Yeah.
Because
well, you know,
it's the media that's trying to divide us.
Well, here in France, what we've got the media owned by a guy named Lagardère, who's a Zionist Jew who works with Rothschild. We've got a man named Bollare, another man owning a lot of periodicals, also Zionist Jew. And then we have a man named Dassault, who owns the jet manufacturing business over here, the Rafale and all the Eurofighter.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he also owns television stations across Europe, and he's also a Rothschild stooge. And then you take a look at this and you say to yourself, wow, you know, it's the same here. Every presenter on TV is a Jew on French television. Every single owner of every media outlet here in France and there and the newspapers. And what ends up happening often here in France, Michael, is the staff that works there slips some information out on one of the publications they own. And immediately, these people are summarily executed publicly. That's it. They're done
well,
in.
This same thing obviously happens here in the United States. Every once in a while, a story will get out there in the mass media, and it's only because someone happened to be asleep. You know, one of the editors didn't think. And then the article gets published, and it reveals some aspect of Zionist intrigue or something about Israel that they don't want to be told. And then what happens is the editors and the writers are called on the carpet, as they say, often fired, or even worse, probably. I mean, I can't cite any specifics, but needless to say, this is what happens. And I don't know how many times over the years I have met independent reporters, editors, other people who have told me their personal stories of how these Zionist, people call them the Zionist Gestapo, how these Zionist thought control groups use their influence on the media behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So it's, it's incredible. I mean, I'll tell you a real quick story here, Daryl. I got a letter many years ago in the mail from a professor of, I believe, economics at the University of North Carolina. He had been a tenured professor who had been around for a long, long time, even at that point. And he took a trip to the Holy Land as a tourist. And he came back, and this was in the the mid to late 1950s, and he came back and was invited by his local civics club to give a talk about his trip to the Holy Land. And when he came back, he told, frankly, what he had seen there. And he described how the Zionists were oppressing the Arab people in Palestine, Christian and Muslim alike. Well, this was just a passing remark in an otherwise, you know, basic lecture about his visit. Within days, organized groups like the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and other Zionist elements were campaigning to have this professor removed from his post at the university as a professor of economics, even though he had said absolutely nothing in his class at any time about Israel or about Zionism. And yet, because he made a passing remark in a lecture to a small community organization, they targeted this man for destruction. And Daryl, I want to tell you, if I've heard one story like that over the years, over the past 28 years, I've probably heard 100 stories like that.
Professor Ferrisson here in France.
There's a very good example right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you know what I want to bring up is that the agency that oversees the entire conspiracy worldwide, they call themselves the Jewish Agency. In fact, we have a European Jewish Agency. We have a North American Jewish Agency. Now, it's the agency that seeds money down to the Jewish congresses that in the local areas. they've got a hierarchy of control they've set up within their own community. But a lot of people make the mistake, Michael, of, you know, moving. They say it's the Bilderbergs, or it's the CFR, or it's this, or it's that. The simple fact of the matter is that in the beginning of this past century, 1905 through 1915, many organizations were seeded with Jewish money that they remained in control over, either ideologically or financially, that went on to become very large organizations such as CFR and others. But the overriding group of everyone are these so-called agencies, and they were all financed and set up here in Europe and then ultimately elsewhere by Rothschild's money and by Oppenheimer money and by Warburg and Schiff and all of the major captains of this crime wave.
Absolutely. You put your finger on it, Darrell. Absolutely. That is exactly, yes, that Jewish agency. And it's kind of interesting because while there are groups like the Anti-Defamation League and the Simon Wiesenthal Center that have a very high public profile, they're the ones who are out there on the front lines. But behind the scenes, where it really counts, where it comes, where the money comes from, you know, follow the money, as they say, that is precisely the method whereby which they operate. And most people have no concept of that. Let me give you a very good example here in Washington, D.C. We have a young entrepreneur who is an American. He's Jewish. His name is Daniel Snyder, and he's the owner of the Washington Redskins football team. Mm-hmm. He started off in the communications industry. But if you start looking at Daniel Snyder, you find out that his entire career was sponsored by Mortimer Zuckerman.
Yep.
Mortimer Zuckerman was a Boston real estate developer who later went on to buy control of the Atlantic magazine, which he since sold, the New York Post newspaper,
and U.S. News.
And now owns U.S. News and World Report. He was also the president of the Conference of Presidents of the Jewish Organizations. Well, it was Mortimer Zuckerman who provided Daniel Snyder the money to get his giant empire built up. But then when you look at Mortimer Zuckerman, behind the scenes, you find out that it was Edgar Bronfman, president of the World Jewish Congress, head of the Seagram's liquor empire, a major stockholder in Time magazine and in Universal Studios and many, many other entities. It was Edgar Bronfman, originally based in Montreal, who provided the seed money that got Mortimer Zuckerman operating. And then when you start looking back behind the Bronfman family, you find the name Rothschild. So this is how they do it. They have been sitting, I think you said this to me the other day, they've been sitting on this gigantic fortune. The Rothschild Empire has been sitting on this gigantic fortune for more than 200 years, and for very strategic, political, economic, ideological, and religious reasons, they have funded so many other gigantic fortunes that are all part of this very closely knit network. And it's not really many people involved. They have a lot of foot soldiers.
Yes.
They have but ultimately when it comes back to it, you find a very small group of people at the very top.
Well, you're right. And,
you
know, when you see the intermediaries that they employ, you know, one of their main players to go between the groups and between the chefs, the chiefs, have been people like Warren Buffett, people like, of course, Henry Kissinger has been a big intermediary throughout the last 30 years.
You know, the first two people I thought of were Henry Kissinger and Warren Buffett in that order. Well, you came up with Warren first and Henry second, but you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because who's just taken a big stake the big investment firm, Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, Warren Buffett.
Of course. Now, I think what's going to happen here, Michael, and I told you this on our private call the other day, that $700 billion bailout is basically coming in as fully valued dollars in today's market, which still holds value throughout the world. You can go to my French ATM here, and if you convert dollars to euros, it comes back at a fairly reasonable exchange rate. This is in advance of the complete implosion or monetizing of the final debt. And they want to run out of the country with their last big theft before the whole house of cards comes collapsing down. Now, what they've done over the last few years, and this is interesting because a lot of people have picked up on this, they've used this overinflated dollar, which it has been for at least 15 years to two decades, and gone out worldwide with this inflated dollar and their derivatives-generated system and bought hard assets. You'll see Rothschild being the man behind the Veolia fortune. Used to be Vivendi. Used to be Universal. Used to be the water companies, Suez, Lyonnais, Des Eaux. You'll see that they've bought up the train systems. They've bought up the train manufacturers here in France. They've bought up every kind of... How about U.S. Filter, the water company that runs 70% of America's water? They own all of the infrastructure and all of the hard assets in the world. And so once the money's gone, they really don't care because whatever comes after it has to pay homage to them because they own the means of everything. They own the means to eat.
Absolutely.
And so when the financial system finally fails, and it will, it is, it's in the process, they've still got all of the reins of power and all of the ways of generating money. And it's more of a complete monopoly now in almost every area you look at, Michael. You just brought up an interesting one here where everybody in South Africa is going to be able to understand this. You know, everybody's a big football fan. You know, Americans, we have American football, big fans. The rest of the world has what we call in America soccer,
right. It's
called football. Hugely popular in every society by design. If you look behind the ownership of these professional sports clubs, almost to a man, every single one of these clubs is either directly and obviously controlled by Zionist Jewish money or behind the scenes is controlled by it. And it goes back all the way to the 50s with Red Auerbach in the Boston Celtics. Or how about Mark Cuban over in owning the San Antonio Spurs? But then you can go to Chelsea right now. The best one is that one of the oligarchs, the Jewish oligarchs from Russia, bought Chelsea in London. If you look through South Africa, you'll find the same. They have the bread and circus, which is the way of keeping people occupied during all of these nightmares. It is a very intricate system they've employed here, Michael.
Yeah, and it's all designed to control information and to control knowledge. You know, the old term brainwashing, a lot of people are familiar with that. Well, that is essentially what they are doing. They are grabbing control of people's minds. And as we say here in America, dumbing them down, getting people, bringing them down to the lowest common denominator, so that you when you turn on television, you just see a lot of sex, you see a lot of violence, you see a lot of just inhuman behavior, and it's being portrayed as normal.
Yes,
and that is all part of the process to turn us all into animals. You know, I saw that the other day I watched for the first time in many years the film Planet of the Apes, which is actually based upon a book by a French author, Pierre Boulez. And you know, it occurred to me that is essentially what we have now. Human beings have become people to be herded around like animals, and we have this animalistic elite running our world, or at least let's put it this way, they are bound and determined in the end to run the world, and I see that happening, and you know, I tell you, it's very, very interesting. There is a famous Zionist philosopher named Max Diamond, D-I-M-O-N-T, and in his book Jews, God, and History, and in his subsequent book The Indestructible Jews, and this first book was hailed as the best ever book at the time on the history of the Jewish people and Zionism. But in any case, in his book, he says And he asserts this without shame, that the way that the Zionist movement looks at the world is this, that the Zionist movement has survived the decline of many civilizations, the decline of many cultures, and in the end, when all of these cultures and peoples collapse, that Zionism will be there to pick up the pieces, that everybody else will have fought to the death among one another, fought within their own nations, and their own nations will collapse, and the financial systems collapse. But in the end, Zionism will prevail, and the people of the world will turn to the Zionists for the leadership. So what's happening in Palestine today, the tragedy of Palestine, is really only a microcosm of a much bigger picture that's going on in the world. And I find it to be a very frightening picture.
Let me ask you this question. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I want to get on to this. You know, my audience, you're talking to over a million people right now, if I'm correct on my statistics. So your voice is traveling far and wide right now. And
that's good.
Yes, it needs to. And I've asked my public to take these accusations in their minds, possibly, but facts in my mind, seriously enough to study it themselves and then tell others, because we are at a very late hour, and I want to maybe have your take on just how desperate we really are right now, because in my view, this financial debacle, which I consider myself one of the world experts, I called this mess in detail a year ago.
You did that.
And I did it 3 to 5 months before anybody. And when I was doing it, people said, he's a crackpot. Well, now they're all calling me back going, how did you know that? Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, once you've seen the facts, to understand it. But we are at a late hour.
Darryl, I agree with you 100%, and I wish I could say that I didn't. But I'll tell you this much. Like I say, I've been involved in this for 28 years. And, you know, every 4 years here in the United States, a lot of alarmists would say, well, this might be our last presidential election. Well, I tell you something, Darryl, I think that the American people and the world, we are at a grievous point in the history of civilization right now.
Yes.
That within the next 30 to 60 to 90 days, we could see the world as we know it literally come to an end. We could indeed become the planet of the apes. And I find it very, very scary. I'll tell you what, Darryl, increasingly in conversations with other people that I know and respect, people who've been around this movement and watching the course of world affairs for a long, long time, they share those concerns.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to get people to see this as the main priority in their lives, even in advance of paying that next bill. Look, ladies and gentlemen, paying your bill to have a good year next year, when next year may not come because of these problems, this priority has to be put in front of your mind, has to be addressed every moment of every day. It has to be brought to people who need education on these facts. You know, the Islamic community that I speak to in South Africa is pretty much interested in this information, and they don't reject it. But this broadcast goes throughout America, throughout Canada, Australia, all over Europe and Africa. In fact, Michael, this broadcast goes to 152 countries.
That's fantastic, Darryl. That's important. That's so important. And, you know, I tell you, I, as an American, I believe in the concept of America first, but I also believe that the people of South Africa should believe in South Africa first, and people of Malaysia should believe in Malaysia first, and the people of France should believe in France first. But nationalism, contrary to what the media tells us, is not warlike. It's not bellicose. We need international nationalism where all peoples and all countries look out for their own interests in opposition to these international Zionist predators, and that's what they are, these plutocratic predators
yep.
who want to bring down our entire world so that they can reign supreme in the end. And that's why all good peoples of all faiths need to stick together and to work together. And that's why I think what you're doing is very important.
Well, the final part of this, I think we're in the last days of what they're trying to do. And once the dollar goes, it underpins almost every other currency in the world. Every central bank in every country, including South Africa, including Uganda, including every country. You can't name a country without having their treasury full of dollar bills.
Exactly.
Once the dollar goes bust, there is going to be a wave of misery that circumnavigates the globe in ways of it's gonna show itself as pestilence. It's gonna show itself as war. It's gonna show itself as just maladies of types I can't even describe here. And if we don't take this information seriously right now, today, we don't have a chance at defeating these people. We have done terrible damage to them. Michael, do you remember 3 or 4 years ago when I was finally starting to get some traction on this subject in the alternative radio movement, when people were talking about 9/11, and I said, Zionist Jews did it, everybody said, you're an anti-Semite, you're a fool. And I remember people like yourself and a couple of other people said, "Now wait a minute here. He's got, he's not crazy. He's got the right stuff here." It wasn't until the last year I've watched people start to latch on to these facts. Now, what we need to do is go from the meager numbers we've got today, probably 5 to 7 million of the world understands this. We've got to go to 700 million. We've got to get this thing everywhere.
Darryl, let me tell you something. Actually, I have a more hopeful outlook in that regard, because I'll tell you, in my travels around the world, okay, in the last 5 years, I've been to Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. I've been to Russia. I've been to Malaysia twice. I've been to Japan. And as I say, I'm going to Dubai for the International Islamic Fair in November. In my experience, all the peoples that I've had the opportunity to talk with in all my travels, they have a better grip, a better understanding in greater numbers of what's going on in the world today than most Americans do. That I find very tragic from my perspective as an American, but I find it very hopeful from my perspective as a human being who wants to live on a planet that's not been devastated by nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I find it very hopeful, Darryl. So I have, even though we have some tough times ahead, I think there are enough people around the world who do know what's going on, and they're in probably greater numbers than we even realize.
Well, I've had somebody say to me that they're very angry with America. America's bad people. They're ever this. And what I'd like the people that think that way to have pointed out to them right away is that the American public believes lies and falsehoods. They've acted upon those falsehoods. And in fact, the people running America today are not Americans. They're Israel firsters, or in fact, dual citizen Israelis. And I could go down the laundry list of the dual citizens who are running things. But the simple truth of the matter is American representation within their own government is almost nil at this point. It is.
Well, it all comes back. My first big book, Final Judgment, talked about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And one of the primary reasons for the assassination of John F. Kennedy was the fact that he was standing in the way of Israel building nuclear weapons. And, if John F. Kennedy had stopped Israel as he tried to do, we wouldn't be on the brink of a nuclear war with Iran right now. We would not have had a pretext to go into Iraq, supposedly, to prevent Saddam Hussein from building nuclear weapons. The Zionists killed John F. Kennedy. When my book, Final Judgment, came out in 1993, people laughed at it. But now they're starting to take a second look at it. And now,
Michael, how about this one, Michael? How about the Zionist Jews took the nuclear technology and how to make a bomb and gave it to the Soviets?
It's exactly, Jonathan Pollard. I mean, all of these interrelated things tie back together. As I said at the outset here today, we find this very clear pattern that cannot be denied.
Yeah.
And thank God that there are growing numbers of people who are out here speaking out, risking life and limb, as they always say, to do it. And, as they always say, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Hey, Michael, nice to be back together, huh?
Yeah, Darryl, this has been fantastic. Keep up the good work.
How many people can you sit down on a radio show like this and hit these kind of points so different, so varied, and just nail it? It really warms me inside to do this.
I hope people will do as I do on my radio show and tell people to tune in to IamTheWitness.com and hear what needs to be heard.
Well, thank goodness for that, Michael. You're on RBN, Republic Broadcasting, also, and you've written a whole bevy of different books regarding this subject. So I urge people to look up Michael Collins Piper on the Internet and go and find a way to get one of his copies of his books. You can go to the American Free Press, I believe. They will sell you a book.
They can look up Saba Islamic Media, where they have published my books in Malaysia. And there's also a website somebody has set up, MichaelCollinsPiper.com, where a lot of my writings appear, and also they can actually get ebook versions of many of my books. So,
perfect.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it tremendously. Yeah. God bless you, and best wishes to all of the listeners. I appreciate them tuning in today.
Thanks, Michael. I'll be in touch with you, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen.
Good.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the show for today. My name again, Darryl Bradford Smith. You have been listening to The French Connection. IamTheWitness.com is the website. Smith@IamTheWitness.com is my contact information. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of your families, and please, be well. Bye-bye now.